Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Triple Play Fantasy Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Chris Torres. I'll be your host today. Flying solo for our first segment, which will be an interview with Mike Wilner, who writes about the Blue Jays at the Toronto Star and is also host of the Deep Left Field podcast. For our second segment, I'll be joined by my co-host Mike Carter for our fantasy follow-up, looking at the week that was across the fantasy landscape and helping you target some players that could help your fantasy teams moving forward. We've got a great show for you. At least I think so. And here to start us off is the aforementioned Mike Wilner, who again writes about the Toronto Blue Jays at the Toronto Star and is also the host of the excellent weekly podcast Deep Left Field, which features in-depth coverage of the Blue Jays. And to me also sticks out because of the great guests that Mike has on there, which includes many active Blue Jays players. Mike, this is now your third time on our show. Appreciate you so much for making the time again. How's it going?
It's going all right. And look, I have a good time every time I'm on the show. So happy to come back. Though if I would offer you one piece of advice, it's to when you do the intro, have the show recorded already so you know whether or not it's a great show.
Okay. I like that. I mean, your podcast is excellent. So I'm going to take any tips that I can from you. I think this one's going to deliver though. So anyway, let's get right into it. Want to ask you about kind of the one of the stories of last night's game, which was Kevin Gausman. Didn't pitch poorly, but also didn't pitch. He really hasn't been the Kevin Gausman that we've been accustomed to seeing. And I think we saw that last night again with only, I think he only had one strikeout, gave up a couple runs to the Royals. So wanted to start off by asking you about him. What's your opinion on his struggles so far?
Well, let me say this off the top that I did not, I didn't see last night's game, or the night before, because, of Passover. And, I was, doing the family thing. Right. But knowing what I know and seeing what I've seen about it, the important thing I think to remember is that Kevin Gausman didn't have a spring training. And, you know, as much as we like to think, you know, it's not that important and big leaguers are able to just hit the ground running and go and be themselves. His first start in spring training was the last game of spring training. So he's just kind of finished spring training now. And last night was a little weird. His fastball velocity was down, but not significantly, like less than 1 mile an hour. But like you said, he didn't strike anybody out. He didn't give up any earned runs and he got into the seventh. So, you know, it's part of the progression, I think, of seeing him get better and better results every start. Last time out was a really good outing, although he threw 100 pitches in five innings. But he beat he should have beaten the Yankees. He certainly did his part. So I think it's been a steady sort of rise of Kevin Gausman. And I would imagine that from now on, we are far more likely to see the guy we're used to seeing now that he's had like a whole spring training. We just did it in the regular season.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think we sometimes, especially fantasy baseball players, we lose sight of, you know, these players are human, you know, and it's very hard to just hit the ground running when you haven't had time to ramp up, especially as a pitcher. So that makes a lot of sense. And you only had the one spring training start after dealing with that injury during spring training. And really right now, this first month is that for him, is his spring training. So, you know, I think people who have him on their teams are happy to hear that you don't sound too concerned. Like it sounds like we'll once he ramps up, he's going to be the Gausman of old, and we'll see that K rate bump back up. Right now, it's back at it's down at 18% when we're used to seeing around 30% for Gausman. So let's hope that it's just a matter of him rounding into form here. Did want to ask you also about Davis Schneider, who surprised us last year. At least he did for me. He kind of came out of nowhere, and then he's had a pretty decent start to the season. And it seems like the Blue Jays are giving him a little bit more run. Now has started 6 of their past 7 games, performing well, has a 19% barrel rate. Do you think that Davis Schneider at this point has played himself into pretty much being an everyday player, or do you think that his playing time is still going to be kind of hit or miss moving forward?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, that this is a team that's really hurting for home runs, and Davis Schneider is someone who can hit home runs. And he's one of, you know, a very few people who have been consistently contributing offensively in big spots. So he's definitely earned this playing time. And unfortunately, Kevin Kiermaier has really had a rough April. So he's lost a lot of playing time, and that time is going to Schneider with Dalton Varsho moving over to center field. Davis Schneider is absolutely very definitely going to play against every left-handed starter. And now it looks like he's going to be playing against most right-handed starters. But we'll see if there's a lull. You know, he had an 0 for 31 last year, despite the overall really great numbers over the course of just 2 months. So if he starts to fight it a little bit and Kiermaier starts to play better, or, and Kevin Biggio is playing well, so there's really no spot for Schneider. Like, he's not one of the, I think, 5 everyday players in this lineup, but right now he's played himself into an everyday role. So, I'm not confident enough to say, yeah, expect Davis Schneider to be playing 5 or 6 times a week from here on out. But if he continues to earn it, he absolutely will.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like he's going to need to keep performing. But if he starts to slump or anything, there might be a short leash. And let's talk about 2 players that are in AAA that maybe could be part of the playing time equation here. Let's talk about Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger, who are both off to really good starts in AAA. Martinez is showing some pretty prodigious power with 6 home runs already in 79 plate appearances. Barger is doing well himself, hitting .314 with 3 home runs in the early going here. When do you think we see them debut with Big League Club?
I really don't think anytime soon. And it's weird because the... Yeah, sorry.
You know, I have Martinez on a draft and hold team. I was hoping he'd be up soon. So you think it's going to be a little while?
Yeah, and also, you know, I caution the same thing, right, that I said with Gausman, although with him it was off an injury. The odds that when Aurelvis Martinez and or Addison Barger come up, they hit the ground running and continue to perform the way they're performing in AAA are really, really low, right? It just doesn't happen very often. And I think fantasy players lose sight of that too, that sometimes they expect players to perform in the major leagues the way they perform in the minor leagues. And for most players, it takes a very long time for that to happen. But right now with Martinez and with Barger, there's just no spot for them. You know, the players who are underperforming with the Blue Jays, are George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Alejandro Kirk. The players that Addison Barger and Aurelvis would be replacing would be Dalton Varsho and Davis Schneider and Ernie Clement and Bo Bichette. Not Bichette, neither of them play shortstop. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. These guys are performing. These aren't the players that the Blue Jays want to shuffle out of the lineup right now. What you have is a situation, and my colleague Gregor Chisholm in the Toronto Star wrote about this the other day, where, yeah, they're pushing and they're doing exactly what they need to do in AAA, but there's no place for them here right now. with the Blue Jays cobbled together second base and third base, but those are working. Schneider and Biggio and Kiner Falefa are all hitting well. And those would be the places that Orelvis and Barger would be taking spots, or DH, Justin Turner is doing a great job. So, you know, neither of them are going to unseat Springer or Vladdy. And those are the positions that really need to get going. So they're sort of blocked at the moment from there being a clear pathway to them being up in the major leagues.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I will, you know, just wait patiently here for Martinez. Yeah. I mean, I kind of look at Kiner Falefa, and as a Yankee fan, I'm like, I don't know, you know, I'm not counting on him continuing strong play because he's
I agree with you, but you know, Ernie Clement deserves the playing time if Isaiah Kiner Falefa falters. Mm-hmm. A and two, both IKF and Clement are here for great defense as well, which is something that Orelvis and Barger do not provide. And the Blue Jays very clearly have gone all in on defense.
Yeah.
You know, to a stubborn extent.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I know you had Joey Votto on your podcast recently. That's in my queue to listen to, but, are there any updates on him? Do you think he plays with the Blue Jays at some point this year? What's going on there?
I hope so. I think it would be a wonderful story. And I think I've said this a million times. I think Joey Votto's got one big year left in him.
I agree.
But it's so confusing. You know, he signed late, and then he got into one spring training game, saw one pitch, and took Zach Wheeler out of the yard.
Right, right.
And then rolled his ankle, stepping on a bat in the dugout when he got back in. And he hasn't played since. And it's been over a month. And at the time, they had said it'll be one day and he'll be back in the lineup. This happened on a Monday. Tuesday was an off day, and he'll be back in the lineup on Wednesday. And it hasn't been anywhere close to that. He hasn't even appeared in an extended spring game or a minor league game or anything like that. He's doing defensive drills, we're led to understand. He's starting to hit on the field. But it seems like if he's like, it might not be till mid-June. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And I know last year, Joey Votto took a very long time, maybe even more time than people thought he needed, but clearly he thought he needed it to come back from the shoulder rehab. And I don't believe he was back in the major leagues until late June, though I could be a month off with that. And I think he really wants everything to be, he wants to feel perfect when he starts to do this again, because he understands that that's the way that he can perform at the level that he's become accustomed to performing at in the major leagues and help a team, because he doesn't necessarily help the team if he's, you know, what he was the last 2 years when he was compromised by the shoulder injury, even though he had a ton of homers last year, would have led the team, would have led the Jays if it had come over a full season. But, I do think eventually we see him, but I'm not sure when, and I'm definitely not counting on
it. Yeah. Yeah, it would just be so cool. I mean, everybody's wanted to see that for so long, right? Like Joey Votto in Toronto. And then when he signed, it was like, oh my gosh, it's finally happening. And then he hits the home run off of Zach Wheeler. We're like, all right, it's, you know, we're back. And then, yeah, it was just so disappointing. And it's been silence, like you said, since. So it's just been very odd. You also had Alek Manoah on your podcast recently. And I did listen to that one. And man, that was a really good interview that you did with him. What was your biggest takeaway from your discussion with him? And when do you think we could expect to see him back in the majors?
I mean, I think now it's about results in AAA, and he's going to have to start getting hitters out in AAA on a regular basis and throwing strikes. And I don't think he walked anybody in his last start, or maybe one and pitched into the sixth, but the overall numbers still weren't great. The biggest takeaway, I think, for me from that interview was that he learned a couple of real hard lessons last year, and he seems to be himself again. You know, he's like I said, in that interview, there's been a lightness about him mentally since the beginning of spring training. He's come in a different guy. And yeah, he's reshaped his body too, and he's gotten back into shape to the extent where he's like walks around the clubhouse with his shirt off all the time now, which he would not do last year. But his, the air about him is just lighter, and he seems like the guy that we knew in 21 and 22. And that's the most important thing to me. He was beating himself up last year. He was doubting himself. He was pitching scared, and you just can't succeed at the highest level if you're doing that. There's a spot for him in the rotation, regardless of how well things are going with the rotation, and they are right now. But if he's Alek Manoah again, they would be thrilled to have him back. We're just going to have to see if he's Alek Manoah again, because if he is, then he should be dominating hitters in AAA for a few starts, and then get him up here and see if it translates. But according to everybody, the stuff is back. The velocity is back. He's got more freedom of movement on the mound now. So I don't know. It's just so, such an unusual case to be so dominant for two seasons and then so awful the next. But like he said to me, during that conversation, you know, Justin Verlander is going to the Hall of Fame, and you look at Justin Verlander's career in the 20 years, there's a 580 in there, and there's a 480 in there, and ERAs, and you know, the rest of it's pretty good. And I remember Dave Steeb, who I think belongs in the Hall of Fame, and was, a lot of people don't know him, but was the best pitcher in the American League in the 1980s. And you know, he had two terrible years in there, but before and after, he was dominant. He came off his worst year and then threw 3-1 hitters in a span of four starts. So it can come and it can go. It's just weird when it happens, and it's weird when it happens at Manoah's age, and we'll have to see if and how he can bounce back from it.
Yeah, after listening to that interview, I find myself really rooting for the guy, because I was just struck at how like open he was in the interview, and really just his mentality around his struggles, and just hearing him talk about, you know, the way he just focuses on the present and the future and putting himself in the best position. And it really sounded like someone that has matured, and, you know, again, just seems like a guy that is easy to root for. So hoping that he could get back and get back to what he was, because it really is just so odd to see a guy that good fall off that badly in one season. I have to believe, you know, that that talent is still there, and that he could tap into that again. All right, we're about 15 minutes in. Wondering if you have time just for our, we try to incorporate a non-baseball element into our show, as I know we've done with you before. Do you have a minute here for us to talk about some parenting strategies that you've been using lately?
Absolutely.
All right. Cause I know in your profile, in addition to your, into your work, with the Toronto Star, you put that you are a proud father of two kids. So, and Mike and I like to talk about that sometimes as fathers ourselves. So tell me, Mike, what are some things that, that maybe you've been doing recently to try and be a better father? And do you have any tips or strategies for our listeners? Because we're all just trying to figure this out on the go here.
Look, and we are. We're all, including me, just trying to figure this out on the go here. And nobody, you know, there's no manual, and you either parent the way that you were parented, if you had good parents, you want to do that, or you're trying to break the cycle, or all of that stuff. For me, I don't know that I have any parenting strategies. I think the most important thing is to show up. The most important thing is to be there for them, and for them to know that no matter what, you're going to show up. And that doesn't mean helicoptering, and it doesn't mean holding their hand when they don't need it to be held. And it doesn't mean not letting them be independent. And, you know, my kids are 22 and 18 and 19. So, you know, one just got back from 4 days in Amsterdam with a friend, which was, you know, harrowing, but she did she was great and was fine taking care of herself. The little one's going to New York next week with a friend. So that sort of stuff is scary as a parent. But just now, I, you know, before we started recording this, I just walked in the door from taking my younger daughter to get an x-ray and to get blood work done. And she had a cough for a few months and we're trying to figure out what's going on. It's, you know, for them to know that they can always rely on you, to me, is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. They know that they're loved. They know that I'm proud of them. They've turned into really, really wonderful young women. And they're smart and they're empathetic and they're, you know, sort of like almost leaders in their friend groups and school groups and things like that. And I think that's wonderful. So I don't know how much is them and how much is the parenting, but I do know that they know, that I'll be there for whatever they need, whenever they need it. And that's them getting safety and security and stability. And all that stuff, and that hopefully sets them up for to be really terrific adults. And so far, so good.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That lots of wisdom in there. So thank you so much for sharing that. And yeah, that is just want to echo that, like that idea of just being of giving them that unconditional love. You know, no matter what it is, like there are times where, whatever, they mess up or they make a mistake, or and your love and your support is not, it doesn't go away in those moments. You know, you're still there, and there's nothing, you know, you can't put words to that and how important that is. So I just love what you shared, just the idea of being consistent and showing up, and that's some really great advice there, Mike. So thank you. And yeah, I think it sounds like you did a pretty damn good job.
So I did my best. I mean, yeah, and that's all anyone can do.
Absolutely.
And, you know, right. Hopefully that's what everyone's trying to do.
Yep. All right. Well, we will leave it there. As always, this was a great conversation with you. Thank you so much. For our listeners, please, go check out Mike's work. He's on X at Wilnerness. And you're also on Blue Sky, right? I think you talked about that. How is that platform, by the way? Because I made a profile like when the whole thing, we didn't know if Twitter was going to last, and I never really went back to it. Do you find that to be a good platform, or what's your thoughts?
It's a lot more pleasant than Twitter. It's a lot more pleasant. There's a lot fewer Nazis, which is always nice. And I find that there aren't a lot, or at least I'm not getting a lot of people who are just there to stir things up and, you know, be an idiot for no reason other than they think that's fun. So I really like that. And I'm trying to wean myself away from Twitter. It's, you know, I understand that the audience is much, much bigger there. I have 85,000 followers on Twitter and 1,200 on Blue Sky, but I'm trying to move as many people over as I can because I just don't like Twitter. It just makes, you know, it puts people in a bad mood. Yeah. And I think that's a rough way to go through life. So what I've started to do is I'll still post information on Twitter. But if you want a back and forth, I will reply to everyone on Blue Sky. I don't do a lot of replying on Twitter, but I do a lot of replying on Blue Sky. So, I'm there under the same handle. If you follow me on Twitter or if you're thinking about it, I would suggest you follow me on Blue Sky instead.
All right. And at the same handle, Wilderness?
Same handle. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So check out Mike over there and check out his work at the Toronto Star. And definitely, definitely check out the podcast, Deep Left Field. I don't think you'll be disappointed. So, all right. Thank you again, Mike. We are going to take a quick break and I'll be back with my co-host, Mike Carter. All right. Welcome back. I have with me my co-host, Mike Carter. You can find him at Fantrax, Rotoballer. He's everywhere. But Mike, good to see you. How you doing, man? How was your week?
It's been a good week. It's been a very productive week. A lot of baseball, as you and I have talked about offline. I mean, throw me in the briar patch, as my wife would say, right? Like, okay, baseball. But get this, though. So, like, in the last, 5 days, I've coached 7 games or something like that. Like, so it's been great. I mean, shout out my freshman guys, man. Chris, I can't say enough about these guys. They're 14-3. We are first place in conference. These guys are, they scratch and they claw and they pitch and they play defense and they're learning that their personal statistics don't matter a hill of beans. The only statistic that really matters is winning. We're getting sacrifice flies. We're moving runners over. We're hitting the opposite way. I got goosebumps, baby. I got to tell you, my boy, Christian Bullock, Ben Johnson, Jack Henderson, to name a few. These guys, man, they just keep grinding. So I'm super proud of them. Jack pitched last night. He got shelled. Jack Carter did not go well.
All right.
But we ended up winning the game anyway, which is fine. And okay. So you know, all good here, man. We are good. How are you out on the East Coast, man? How's things going out there for you this week?
Hey, man. Here on the East Coast, the Knicks are the talk of the town.
Oh my God!
Here we go. So we're not going to get into basketball, but I just got to give a shout out. I've never been so excited. I'm probably a little bit of a bandwagon fan. I love the Knicks 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. All right. Like I grew up, I loved the Knicks as much as the Yankees back when I was a kid. Mm. And then they just went through a period where they've been so bad for so long. And it's been super exciting to see them actually have a team to root for. You know, yeah, like I know they had Carmelo years, but like this team really embodies New York. And it's just been like this. It's just crazy. Everybody's talking about the Knicks around here. So, I'm doing good, man. Having a good week. Fantasy teams had a good week. So, yeah, all good. So let's get right into it. Starting off with what we usually do in our fantasy follow-up, we take a look at the week that was and try to identify a takeaway from the past week. So, Mike, what's yours for this past week?
You know, I am a White Sox fan, which we talk about every podcast and how horrible that is for me right now at 3-20. They had a lead last night and they blew it. And I think the thing that I've kind of talked about with you a lot just as friends and in our text thread is I think people are forgetting something about fantasy baseball that's really important to think about, which is that it is supposed to be first and foremost a hobby and it is also supposed to be fun.
No, we don't have fun. It's all business. All right.
I understand that. And I understand that there's a lot of people who have a lot of money tied up in playing, real money tied up in playing, and that they make decisions based on the finances of it and trying to win, which we're all trying to win, but we don't have any control over a damn thing in this world. You know, I read one time that, you know, a long time ago that when you look at someone's tombstone, not to be morbid, you don't have any control over the first number. You don't have any control over the second number. You only have control over the stuff that happens in the middle, but even that you don't have a lot of control over. So what I'm really trying to remind myself on a lighter note is I don't have any control over what happens to Blake Snell's abductor muscles. I don't have any control over what happens to Eloy Jimenez's hamstrings, right? I'm just going to watch games. I'm going to enjoy it like I always do. And my fantasy teams, they might be good. They might suck. They might be in the middle. And that's okay. I don't have to have religion come from my fantasy baseball teams. And I think that while that's not a quote-unquote takeaway, I think it's something that we all probably should remind ourselves because, man, when you see go on Twitter in the morning sometimes and you see people, you know, you're doing your doom scrolling or whatever you want to call it, and it's injury after injury. Dave Funnel texts me and I'm just like cringing to open my phone, right? I'm like, oh, he's sending me something from Twitter. Here we go again. but just have fun with it. You know, try to have fun with life and the stuff that's going on around you. How about you, Chris? What's a takeaway that you've had? You probably have a much better takeaway than I do about this week.
Well, I will just say this quickly off of to piggyback off of what you said, this idea of only controlling or like not being in control. And yeah, there are so many things, whether it's fantasy baseball, whether it's life, that we don't have control over. And I think that's a really important, you know, thing to remind ourselves. And I think what I try to do, like, for example, when you have a guy that gets injured, you know, and there was just no way you could have predicted it. Or a guy gets blown up, like you have a pitcher who isn't a good matchup, and then he goes out and gives up eight runs. You know, there are some things like it's like, all right, well, there was nothing I can do to prevent that. It just is what it is. And I think what I try to do in those situations is just give myself that reminder. Let's just focus on what I can control. What's the next step? Right. Mm-hmm. I could sit here and think about how unlucky I am or it sucks that this happened. And the reality is that's just wasted energy. Mm-hmm. Right. So just at that point, and I think after playing the game for as many years as I have, I've gotten better at this. Like, all right, these things happen. I got unlucky. Just move on. It's on to the next thing. Who am I picking up in Fab? I lost a pitcher. Okay. Let's see what's out there and let's see how I can work around that. Mm-hmm. You know, so just like, because again, it's like the time that you spend just hemming and hawing about, you know, what happened could be better spent figuring out what's your next move. So, just wanted to kind of tied into what you said. And, I what you said about not taking it too seriously. I do that. Mm-hmm. Need that mm-hmm. reminder myself sometimes as well. So,
well, you have that problem of being a Yankees fan, and Yankees fans always take baseball very seriously.
That's right.
It is a good reminder. And let me tell you, as your friend and as your co-host, you do have a lot of fun playing. I mean, even when your teams aren't going well, I know that you're having fun doing it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, this game adds a lot of joy to my life. And yeah, the days where it's not going well, it probably affects me more than it should. But overall, you know, I wouldn't trade for this stupid little hobby for anything else. So, but yeah, my takeaway this week was around the eye test. And what I mean by that is just being careful with how heavily you weigh the eye test. You know, I think most of us, not everybody actually that plays fantasy actually watches baseball, but I think most of us do. And it's because it's enjoyable, right? And I think sometimes I make the mistake. I probably watch a little bit more baseball this year for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. It's just worked out. And an example of this, last week I watched Kenta Maeda pitch, and it was a day game, and I was working.
I saw your tweet about that. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. About basically like he's shot and don't put him anywhere near your lineups in the future. Right. Well, that did not age well, because his next start, after getting shelled against Texas at home, his next start, which I benched him everywhere. I have like 6 Maeda shares out of my 11 teams, benched him everywhere this week. And he proceeds to go out and pitch 5 scoreless innings. And, you know, I don't know if I would have started him if I hadn't seen that Texas start. But after seeing the way he looked in that game a week ago, I didn't even consider it. I'm like, nope. I just looked at like his pitches. They didn't have any life to them, and his body language. And I'm like, this guy's done. Like, I'm going to just have to bench him for like, you know, who knows how long. And I think I need to remind myself that, you know, you can catch these guys, like, unless you're watching these players every single day or every single start, like sometimes you're going to catch guys on a bad day. Especially a pitcher, like sometimes they just don't have it, or they have a tough matchup, or you see one of your hitters and he's in a slump, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember last year I went to go see Spencer Jones, the big Yankees prospect. He plays here in Hudson Valley. I saw 2 games with him. He went 0-for-6 with 4 strikeouts in this, you know, the 2 games that I saw of him. I'm like, oh, this guy sucks. What's everybody talking about? You know, but then I see the highlights of spring training, how, you know, obviously he's a very good prospect. So with baseball, my point is we just have to be careful with taking one little snapshot that we see and letting that, like carrying that visual with us and letting that, determine our evaluation of a player. Because a lot of times it's not enough of an accurate picture to make that determination.
Correct. So
that's what I'm going to do is just, of course, like it can help to watch and evaluate that way, but I'm no damn scout, you know, so I'm not going to weigh it as heavily as, you know, I'm very statistically based in my evaluation.
Right. You have to be. Yep.
Right. And especially with baseball, I think football a little different. But with baseball, we have so many stats to go off of that I'm going to rely a lot more on that than me, you know, tuning in for a couple innings of a guy during his start. So
that's great advice. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And some people may be better than me at that. And, you know, if that works for you, all power to you. But most of us probably aren't. Most of us aren't scouts. So that is my... My word of advice for today. All right. So, and real quick, I made a note that I want to mention this. So I interviewed Mike Wilner earlier this afternoon. And so I did that around like 1:30 and we're recording at about 9 p.m. So for those who listened to the first part, I asked a question about Addison Barger and Aurelvis Martinez. And I asked, you know, when do you think these guys are coming up? Because it just, to me, it seemed like they didn't have anybody that was really blocking them. You know, if they're performing well in AAA, they're going to be up soon. Sure. Mike said he didn't think that they were going to be up anytime soon. And then and he messaged me about this right after. Literally, I pick up my phone. I open Twitter. What is the first thing that pops up on Twitter? When I go on, it's Addison Barger gets called up because Kevin Kiermaier went on the IL. So for anybody out there who just listened to the first part and are like, wait a second, Addison Barger's already up. That's what happened. Just wanted to point that out. I think, you know, I told Mike, I spoke it into existence, I guess.
You did speak it into existence, my brother. Yeah. That's the right way to put it.
Yeah. So anyway, let's do our bullpen section. As always, a lot to talk about. So, Mike, I'm going to give you the floor here. Tell us about some bullpens that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, I got two that I really want to talk about and another two that I think we can kind of put to bed some of the rumor mongering that was going around about it last week. So the first one that I'm pretty concerned about and taking a look at is the Chicago Cubs. I told anybody who would listen over wintertime that Edward Alzolay's forearm strain wasn't just going to go away with rest over the winter. And I'm concerned in looking at him. You know, you're talking about the eye test a little while ago. He's not really passing the eye test right now, is he? It's not looked real good. He's struggled. He blew another save this week. They did use Hector Neris to get a save this week. And Yency Almonte, who was part of the trade with the Dodgers here over the winter in which they acquired Michael Busch as a throw-in on the Michael Busch trade, actually had a save this week as well and has pitched quite well for them. He actually leads the Cubs in holds at this point. If Alzolay is to be injured and miss time, or if he continues to be ineffective, I don't think Craig Counsell is going to wait real long to start using Hector Neris in that situation. I think Mark Leiter Jr. would remain in a setup role. Almonte would remain in a setup role. And I think Neris, just based on the fact that he does have some closer experience, would most likely be the guy there to target. So if you're looking for somebody to speculate on saves, he's going to be available in a lot of leagues still, but I'm guessing after this weekend, he won't be. So that's somebody that you might want to make a small fab bid on. I'm also watching Arizona, where Kevin Ginkle has been the closer there to start the season with the injury to Paul Sewald. But there's a lot of word on the street right now that Sewald will actually be back in the next couple of days. In fact, the top brass of the Diamondbacks is meeting tomorrow to discuss whether he needs any more rehab time, and he might be back soon. It remains to be seen exactly what they're going to do there with that situation, because Ginkle's been pretty good. In 10 games, he's got 4 saves, an ERA of about 3, striking out about a batter an inning thereabouts, and he's been good in that role. However, Sewald is one of the best closers in the game and statistically really is undervalued in a lot of places. You know, it's a guy that's got a strikeout rate over 30% every year and is going to get saves. I think what would happen down the road, it might not happen right away, is I think Seawald will be back in the closer chair and Ginkgo will go back to the role that he was dominant in last October, which is the eighth inning role as a setup for Seawald. And the other two that I think that people have been bearing watch on and worried about were Toronto, where Jordan Romano did come back last week and was inserted into the closer role again right away. But Eric Swanson also returned at the same time that he did, which shakes up that hierarchy a little bit. Chad Green did go back to the IL. No one's surprised by that. He's hurt all the time. Yimi Garcia remains a guy there that also could get some opportunities. And for the love of God, free Nate Pearson. I mean, I don't understand why this guy never gets an opportunity to do anything there. And a team that continually underperforms, a la my Chicago White Sox. But Romano's the closer. And then finally in Pittsburgh, I think David Bednar put to rest any trouble there with three consecutive saves here over the last week. He's clearly their best option. Aroldis got suspended earlier this week for a game, and Bednar seems to be back and okay. So those are the four that I really wanted to cover this week, Chris.
All right, I got to ask you about one more. Tampa Bay. What the hell's going on there? Because just before we started, I was looking at that game. Jason Adam, who everybody assumed was going to be to step right in for Pete Fairbanks, who is on the IL.
Yeah.
He got the seventh and the eighth inning today.
Yeah.
And then it looks like Garrett Clevenger. I didn't see how the game ended up, but I saw that Garrett Clevenger started the ninth inning. So, I mean, is this just a situation where the Rays are going to Ray and it's just going to be a mishmash of guys until Fairbanks comes back, or do you have any read on that?
It's interesting, right? Because, you know, Fairbanks went on the IL earlier this week, and the same day that he went on the IL, Adam got the win and Clevenger got the save. I think what's going to happen in Tampa, and people don't like to hear this, is that Adam is going to continue to be the highest leverage guy there. And that might mean that he's pitching to the seventh. That might mean that he's in the eighth. It could mean that he's in the ninth, depending on where they're at. They've got two really good lefties in this bullpen. You mentioned Garrett Clevenger already. And then they also have Colin Poche, who they trust with just about any situation as well, although he did blow a save last night. So they feel pretty confident, I think, using any of those guys. And another guy that's kind of lying in the weeds here is Phil Maton. You know, he's been really good. I shouldn't say really good. I mean, his ERA is bloated right now, but he's actually showing some signs of kind of coming through it. It has seven holds already. So he's a guy that they can also use there. And we know that Kevin Cash doesn't even really care. I mean, last year they had Kevin Kelly get saves. Chris Devensky is there. You know, like, there could be any of a number of guys. They always find guys. Rays are going to Ray. I still think Adam would get the majority of the save chances there. But again, you've got Poche, you've got Maton, you've got Clevenger. All are guys that have proven that they can get big outs. And Clevenger's actually looked really good to start the year. His fastball velocity is higher than it's been. And his strikeout rate, last I checked, was about 30%. So it's going to be an interesting situation. I think Adam will be the guy that a lot of people are going to go to, like you're saying. But he might not end up being the guy that's going to get a lot of saves. And I feel sorry for Pete Fairbanks, right? I mean, we know that he's battled injury issues over the course of time. He's also got this thing called Raynaud's syndrome, which is a really, really tough thing, especially with the weather kind of vacillating back and forth between hot and cold. He's got that tingling sensation in his fingers, and he can't feel the ball, and he really struggles with it from time to time in the weather when it's cold and then when it's warm and kind of going back and forth. So it was not unexpected that he was going to have some level of difficulty at some point and probably be on the IL for it. Probably will struggle again in September, October, when the weather starts to cool off in a lot of cities in the major league circuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, guy just can't stay healthy.
Can't get a break.
I will say that interview that he gave, did you see that after the game?
Yeah.
The last game that he blew? That was pretty hilarious. But
it was pretty good.
Yeah. But it just, as far as the Rays, it sounds just kind of like a mess. I had actually speculated. I have a lot of Phil Maton on my drafted hold teams. It's like a 50th round pick because right after he signed with the Rays, I saw that they gave him $6 million, which for a team like the Rays, who doesn't pay anybody, I'm like, why did they pay Phil Maton $6 million? So my thought was at the time, if Fairbanks goes down, they don't want Adam to get all these saves again, because then he's going to be more expensive in arbitration.
So my thought was, well, they'll have Maton there. And I figured, well, they're probably going to make Maton into like last year's Robert Stevenson. You know, he's going to be lights out and they'll just have him slot into the ninth inning. Hasn't happened yet, obviously. I think he could work his way in depending on how long Fairbanks is out. But yeah, I think the biggest takeaway, I think the Jason Adam managers and people who spend a lot of fab on him might be a little disappointed with the results that they get. So
I agree. Yeah. I think Maton is a guy that is going to figure it out. I mean, he got off to a really rough start and his numbers right now don't look great, but he's been pitching in some high leverage situations and the stuff is there. I mean, if he gets his K rate back up to what it's been right now, it's only about 7.8. He's a guy that usually averages 10 or 11 K per nine. The walks have been an issue for him. He's going to figure it out. He's a 31-year-old veteran. This is not a new guy to anybody here. And his left on base percentage too is really, his strand rate has been really kind of poor too. Everything comes back to the middle. It would not surprise me at all if Maton got save chances here if Fairbanks misses an extended time.
Yeah. Yeah. From your lips to God's ears. One other player that I wanted to mention, wanted to get your thoughts on him, is Reed Garrett. Someone that I picked up in a couple leagues this past weekend, and I was actually pretty excited. I mean, no, I was surprised. Like, nobody, like, the backup bid was $2 in my league, and I spent like 21. I thought people would really be in on him after,
sure,
you know, his fast start. And last week he came in the ninth inning and struck out the side. I think Edwin Diaz, I think he just was unavailable or whatever. Right. So I really thought that people would be in on him, especially with all the pitching injuries, like finding a middle reliever that can give you a really exceptional K rate. It's better than a lot of your back end starters that you're going to find, especially on the waiver wire at this point. So I thought a lot of people would be in on him. Turns out that they weren't, but I'm pretty excited to have him on my team. I think he reminds me, it's like the Ronaldo Lopez corollary. Remember we talked in the offseason, I was like, Ronaldo Lopez is a good buy in these draft and hold leagues because there's multiple paths to upside for him. There was rumors he was going to be in the rotation, which have come to fruition. You know, there's like multiple paths for him to be valuable. So like with Reed Garrett, who knows? He's doing these multi-inning stints. Who knows? Are they going to pull like a Michael King and insert him into the rotation at some point? Like, yeah, possible. If Edwin Diaz goes down, I would say right now it's probably him or Ottavino is the handcuff to Edwin Diaz. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I think, you know, Garrett's not going to be a secret for long. I mean,
he has over a 50% K rate. And I watched him again today. That's not including today. He gave another two innings in San Francisco, four more strikeouts. I mean, this is ridiculous, you know? And I know he's kind of a guy who came out of nowhere and people may be skeptical, but I don't care if it's only 12 innings or whatever it is. Like, for you to have that level of performance, like that means something, right? Like, he's not going to all of a sudden become like a 20% K rate guy. Like, I think we could confidently say he's a 30 to 35% going forward. And who knows, maybe even higher. I mean, he looks exceptional right now. So my point is, like, taking a chance on a guy like this, especially in a 15 teamer, like, if nothing changes, there will be weeks that I'm going to use him. Like, next week, he plays seven games. He'll be in my lineup. He'll absolutely be in my lineup because I could expect he's going to get like three or four innings. And if he pitches three or four innings, probably seven or eight strikeouts. That's as good as pretty much most starters are going to give you in a week.
So, absolutely. And I totally agree with you on that. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this kind of outside of the podcast realm about these middle relief guys that are better for you than a team's fourth or fifth starter. And you can see that with guys like Brian Abreu. You can see that with guys like Matt Brash when they're healthy, right? These are guys that can really come in and give you five or six strikeouts in a week, right? Which is as much as you might get from an average or less than average starter, and maybe possibly vulture a winner or save in the whole thing too. The thing that's really interesting about Garrett and looking at him is that these guys can't pick up the slider. he's got two different sliders that he's really throwing, right? And one is like that hard kind of like gyro slider that they refer to, and the other one looks more like a sweeper, but they look exactly the same coming into the hitters. And so when the hitters can't delineate between the two pitches, he's going to continue to have success if he's continuing to be able to do that. And Thomas Nestico, who we had on last week, had a really, really nice thread about this. If people want to read more about it, Thomas is obviously a way smarter guy than me and goes into way more detail than that. But that's the basic thing that I see from a baseball perspective, is that guys are having a really hard time picking up on that. Used in the right role, this could be a very effective guy. And this is a guy that I would suggest that you roster, and especially in deeper leagues where you might have really, really questionable starters at the back end of your rotation. And right now, with the pitching landscape being what it is, you really need to start mining middle relievers that can help you out during the week, right? And it's as much as you and I talk about it, it's still underutililized in a lot of leagues.
It absolutely is. I think people don't, you know, the idea of rostering a middle reliever to most people just seems like, well, what's the point? But when a guy is putting up those levels of strikeouts and pitching in high leverage, it makes too much sense, and you're getting elite ratios to boot. So I think it's a no-brainer. If he's out there and you're NL only or 15 team or up, go pick up Reed Garrett. Anyway, that is all we got for our baseball stuff today. Got a few minutes left, and as we usually do, wanted to end on something non-baseball related. And I actually I know I put in the show sheet mental health minute. I did a parenting minute with Mike Wilner. We talked about parenting, kind of what strategies he's using. I know we've done that before with other guests. So take your pick. If you want to do parenting or mental health minute, whatever it is, the floor is yours.
I think for me, you know, as I've talked with you about the baseball insanity of, you know, helping coach the freshman team, helping coach Jack's 13U team. What I really learned in the last few weeks is that I have a lot more power and control over certain things than what I think I do. And I was very leery of asking for the time from work to be able to leave early certain days to be able to get the games on time and whatnot. And what it reminded me of is that I've spent a lot of time. I've been in the same place for almost 30 years working a variety of different jobs, but I'm now the principal there in the therapeutic day school world, right? And I have some, not a lot, but I have some gravitas with that, with my staff and with my boss. And I told her that I wanted to do this. I said, I'm not going to get asked to do this again. I want to do this. I really want to jump on and do that. I might have to leave a half hour early some days. I might have to let somebody else be in charge. And it struck me that what I was doing in that moment was creating that work-life balance that I need to have more of. I'm a type A personality. I love to work. I do not mind 12-hour days. I don't. Never have. Now, I'm getting older and I'm aging, but I really wanted to set some limits on that, to spend some time doing that, because one of the things that's really cool about coaching the freshman team is that they allow Jack to come with me to everything. So Jack goes with me to practice. Jack goes with me to the games. He sits on the bench. He chews sunflowers. He's with the guys. He's getting exposure to older guys that are a great influence on him. That's all part of work-life balance. And so it reminds me that I have to have that balance, because for me, it is really easy for me to get out of whack with that and have Katie or one of the kids say, boy, we haven't seen you in 3 days. What have you been up to? And have that conversation. So it's reminding me about that, Chris. I can't wait to listen to the parenting minute with Mike. I know he's really good at that stuff. What are you doing this week, and what are you going to focus on in our little conversation here tonight?
So quickly, since I talked with Mike about parenting, I was thinking, actually today I was with my kids at the playground. So I just want to talk about that for a sec.
That's awesome.
We have a little playground. We live in a townhouse development. So we all took a walk after dinner, and kids were just hanging out. And my son, he's 4, and his thing, he just loves being like chased. Like, he likes when I pretend to be a monster and like chase him around. Like, that's just, he just goes nuts for that. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, like, after a while, man, like, you know, you're like, all right, I don't really want to do this right now.
I've had
you know, so at first, so we get to the playground and he's like, Daddy, I want you to be a monster. And my daughter, you know, asked me too. I'm like, guys, you know, I just, Daddy's tired. Like, I just want to chill. You know, you guys just go play. We go on the swings, whatever. And, you know, it struck me just, I had already been thinking about like what I was going to talk about this week. And it was like, you know, I'm sitting here telling my kids, like, you know, I don't really feel like doing this, but I got to freaking remind myself, like, how much longer are my kids going to actually want me to do stuff like this with them? You know, like, yep. My kids are little and it just, I can't let this time pass by and not take advantage of things like that, you know?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, I'm over there on public playground like a buffoon making weird noises. But you know what? Like, that's, they're going to remember that, you know? Yeah. Like,
you're creating memories. Moment. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so maybe I didn't feel like it. Maybe I look silly. But I felt like that was the best way I could show up for my kids in that moment. And like you said, that's how I can, you know, help create those memories. So
and wait till they get older, Chris. Wait till they get older, because what will end up happening is they'll tell you things and you'll be like, something like what you're thinking was inconsequential. Like doing the monster noises at the playground will be something that they remember. My kids are 17 and 13. We talk about vacations and trips that we've taken, and they remember the oddest things. Like, do you remember when that time when we were up in Michigan and we didn't have any Wi-Fi and we just played Uno and we played card games all night? It's like, I remember that. Yeah, I remember it. But I'm like, oh, don't you remember when we went and saw the lighthouse, or we went to this beach or whatever? They care about that stuff, but they care about that time. They care about your time.
All right. That's it. Yeah, we've talked about that before. Kids don't really want the fancy, you know, they don't want the toys or the big expensive trips. Like, that stuff doesn't really, in the end, mean much to them. They just want your time. They want your attention. And if you give them that, you're really setting yourself, you're setting your kids up for healthy relationships down the road. So anyway, we will leave it there for today. Next week, we don't have a guest. Who should we have on, Mike?
I got some people. It's my turn. Okay. I got to own a little bit of this.
You got to own it, baby. Let's go. All right. So I'm going to just put my feet up, sit back, and let you handle next week. But we'll be back next week. We're trying to stick to this every Wednesday thing, and we're doing pretty good, I think, with that so far. So the plan is for, you know, next Wednesday, we'll be back behind the mic and hopefully giving you a good entertaining show and some good information here. So until then, for Mike Carter, I'm Chris Torres. Thank you so much for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.